welcome to Check It Out Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're doing Factorio and Abzu.
Abzu. Not Azbu?
Not Abu. Apu. Nope.
Nope. Or Abadabba. Real quick, before we get started, we should say we got our Factorio codes from the developer. Is that correct?
Yes. The developer gave us a few codes, and very kind of them. I just reached out, and they want us to let us know when it's up. So here you guys go. Thank you very much for the copies. That was very kind of you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
So let's go right into Factorio. Factorio is a it's hard to describe. I'll go into that a bit later. But it was released originally, the original alpha came out in 2012, and it's available on Windows, OS X, and Linux, and it's still technically early access, very heavily developed. New update comes out, you know, every week or two.
2012?
Yeah, that's wow. Apparently when the first alpha release was out. It's being developed by a team calling themselves Woob Software, who are from Prague. I read that way literally.
It's okay. I have done that exact same thing before.
I was just, you know, just scanning an article. And, yeah. All right.
I also, you know, just played the new Deus Ex, which takes place in Prague.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to hear JC, you know, not JC, Adam Jensen go like, Prague. Like 1,000 times.
That's good too, right? Even raving about that.
Oh, yeah. That's really good.
All right. Anyway.
Very different than either of these games.
Yeah, true. So, yeah, it's been available on Steam since February of this year. And expected a full release, a 1.0 version sometime, you know, this or next year, presumably.
Even before it is released, it is wildly successful.
Oh yeah, this is a huge hit already.
Yeah, huge hit, overwhelmingly positive. Mm-hmm. Good reviews on Steam. And the people, you know, I know who like this game, like it was like this hole was made for you.
Yes.
You know, like that kind of thing. And like everyone who I've talked to who is like into this, like it's going to be interesting to talk about it because it's something that's not for me, but it's interesting the way it's not.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting game.
I've seen some of your talking on Twitter and in the chat about it. And I definitely want you to go into waxing philosophical about it because I really liked what you had to say. But let me try and describe what it is.
Yeah, let's say what it is before, just in case. And one thing I'll say before we get into this, because, you know, part of this show, unlike other shows on the network, kind of functions a little bit consumer-fronted or consumer-friendly. Like, I think people do use this show for recommendations in a way that, like, they don't use, you know, other shows on the network for recommendations.
Right.
Listen to this carefully. Because if this sounds, like, good to you, like, this is similar in my mind to something like Rocket League, where I feel like it is probably one of the best expressions of an idea that's not, you know, not necessarily for me, but like I can recognize that it is in this weird kind of pure way, this type of game. So like, if this sounds appealing to you, you should 100% try this.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm going to try and give it kind of a clean elevator pitch that probably involves more than you would even get just by, you know, starting it up and playing for an hour. You are a human or humanoid person on a planet otherwise empty of whatever you are. And there are various elemental resources just available. There's some coal and iron and copper stockpiles. It plays like a RTS, or it looks like an RTS when you're looking at the camera, right? So it's overhead. You can see all these resources. And you can go up to them and start mining them out, and you have crafting recipes, and you can craft stuff. So it's very heavily a crafting game. But where this diverges from everything else is it then gives you the ability to produce tools from what you've mined out to then automate that work. So you can build miners that will then extract those resources from the ground. And you build a shit ton of conveyor belts to move those resources you've dug out around. And you build little factories or little units that will take multiple resources in, which you have to manually pull in off of your belts with robotic arms, into combining them into making new resources, which can then be continually taken off of that machine, added to other ones. And you have this huge crafting recipe and research that you're going through, successful or researching throughout the game to unlock new stuff to build and thus automate the construction of. So your point in this game, it's hugely sandboxed, very open, You can do whatever you want. There's a couple tutorial levels, but the tutorial is pretty weak at the moment. But when you're just playing a full open sandbox game, your ultimate goal is to create a rocket. And the purpose of that rocket is that while you're trying to extract all these resources and construct this massive factory out of all these, you know, small tools that you're building up over time, this massive sprawling factory you're going to have by the end, you're producing pollution that the native species of the planet, these aliens that people call biters, are coming to. They can see your pollution and they come attack anything that produces pollution or anything that attacks them, like yourself or any defenses you put up. So what you are attempting to do is produce a rocket that will destroy all of the native species and get them out of your hair forever.
So you can continue to produce rockets.
So you can continue just to... Yeah, exactly. So you can continue to turn this whole planet into one massive sprawling factory of your heart's desire.
Yes.
It plays kind of like a 2D Infinifactory. Once you start getting stuff kind of going, you're manipulating a lot of different bite-sized tools and trying to fit within the space constraints and size constraints that you have around yourself.
It's real different though than Infinifactory, yeah. Though, because it's not it's not constrained by a win condition.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no puzzle pieces that you're trying to create other than what you need for whatever else you want to produce.
Yes. You make your own short-term goals to go towards this long-term goal that is so far away as to be abstract.
Incredibly out there. Yeah. Like I'm maybe a tenth of the way in my furthest point, having played probably 10 hours at this game, if not more. And I'm very far away from being able to get anything that will get me to the point of having a rocket before I get just completely demolished by the biters.
Mm. So there is kind of like an interplay between, you know, there is a skill test to the game, like how well you can play it, because mm-hmm. you need to be able to proceed fast enough to where you can get to that end condition before the win condition, before the death condition mm-hmm. gets to you. But what's notable that, and I believe I read this, that like one of the first things they did when they were adding things to it was make the like peaceful mode.
Yeah,
make the sandbox mode, which is very similar to Will Wright's story a little bit of playing Raid on Bungling Bay and just being like, oh, the toolbox part of this is more fun than the actual game.
Yeah, exactly.
Because nobody I know who likes this game is really concerned with the end condition.
No,
which is one of the most interesting things about it is that like it has a win condition that doesn't matter to any of the players.
Yeah, pretty much.
Nobody cares. That's really interesting because that fail condition you talked about with the biters has this like kind of element of tower defense to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of that DNA in there, so it's like Terraria Infinifactory tower defense.
Yeah, it's obviously heavily inspired by Minecraft mods that have kind of taken that same idea. You know, Minecraft, you go around digging up resources, but there was a lot of mods that came out that were emphasizing this automation, this creating something that'll create the resources you're trying to craft yourself. Mm-hmm. Automatically, and you don't have to do any of the work. You just have to do all the work to set it up, and then you get a box full of the goodies that you've been trying to make,
which ultimately like fuels doing more work.
Exactly, right? That's
like
all it does.
There's never like a point. If this were real life, you would, you know, and maybe we wouldn't do this, you know, maybe that's part of the point of the game, is like you would make these automations until you could pursue higher things and be leisurely and like live a life.
Right. This is work for the pursuit of higher work.
Yeah, it is just work. Like, and there's just more work. And that is like, that is one possible kind of interpretation of the game.
Right.
Which I think is a pretty cool thing for a game to be about,
mm-hmm.
you know, is that you'll never get to the point where like there's enough.
Right.
You know, that's like one of the things that, that kind of defines the game. The other thing that's interesting to me, the fact that like you're ultimately trying to wipe out this planet and pollution is, you know, they're attracted by pollution, kind of frames it as an environmental story.
But that's, which is hilarious, right? Because yeah. you're the bad guy here.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, and that's what, you know, that's one way you could say what it's trying to do is that like you're going to keep pursuing this because progress for its own sake is actually evil. Like it's fun, but you're doing it for it's to no end. You're not improving anyone's life.
Right.
You know, except for your own. And even then, you're not really improving your own life. You're still doing the same amount of work. You're just doing different work.
Yep.
It's on a higher scale, but you never stop just doing labor.
Yep.
In this game. You know, so that's one way to interpret it. But it's interesting the way that that part is totally just kind of contextualized by like the set dressing. So one way I was thinking about this game, if it wanted to make a game about like the beauty of human ingenuity rather than like the dark side of it, you would say, you know, instead of pollution, you would say it was noise or something like that that was attracting the monsters. And then you would be building a communication array. And then it would be the Martian. You know, it would be like, I'm trying to get away with the power of human, you know.
Right.
I have to use like my all of my wits to get up, you know, rebuild from nothing and actually escape and do something. And then it would feel like, oh man, human ingenuity is amazing.
Right.
You know, like, you know, that was the uncynical message of that movie. It's, but it wouldn't actually change what you're doing.
Nope.
Which is also, you know, and the people who play it who don't care about that, you know, it, that's kind of part of the message too, I think. If there can be one, if there even has to be one, which there doesn't.
And, obviously, the game was designed mechanically first. Otherwise, there'd be nothing to play all, to this point. There'd be nothing to play. But those mechanics, I like that they chose this sort of anti-industrious theme to a game about industry.
Yeah.
I think it's a comical
it's a little bit a little bit subversive, you know, more so than you'd expect. The it's also so I was trying to think of like in talking to people who love this and people who really like it, talking to you a little bit, and then also to Brayton, my roommate and our mutual friend, who was also like going pretty deep on this.
Yeah, we played a little bit together this weekend.
There's a little bit of like, I think that you have to have so you should ask these questions like about yourself, like if you're somebody who like really really kind of gets off on order, you know, like that's gonna, this game is going to indulge in that a little bit, you know, like you are going to, there's a part of this where like people share their screenshots of their factory planets on our Slack channel, and it's just about, you know, the symmetry and the efficiency, you know, and that being like, if that's something that like gets you on a really elemental level, I think that this, I can't think of a better game that engages that.
It's brutalism, the game.
Yeah.
How beautiful can you make something that is just designed to make more shit?
That is ultimately kind of ugly. Like when you look at the color palette and the way this game actually presents itself, like it's pretty hideous.
Yeah, you can make, I don't know if it's a mod or something, but I saw someone screenshot where they're like using the yellow striped flooring as like a visual piece, like they were using that as decoration, and it's like that's, you know, that's a warning marker, like don't stand here.
Yeah,
that's a pivotal part of factory floors where it's like this is a bad place to be, and they're trying to make beauty out of that.
But it's not brown, so like, you know, like you'd use it to make something decorative because like this game is so like metal and brown and like,
yeah,
and again, that's not really a criticism, I think that's the point. You know, and if you can find, you know, again, like here, if you like watching like how it's made and watching a machine do a repetitive task over and over perfectly, you know, like that's a thing, you know, that's a thing. It's funny how and this is, we've done other games that are kind of, because there's a programmic element to this.
Yes.
When you make these conveyor belts and stuff, you're setting like part A influences part B, which then feeds into this that creates this other thing is feeding into it, like you're doing kind of spatial programming.
Yeah, these big loops and chains of
elements of refining.
Yeah, exactly.
But unlike, you know, Human Resources Machine or InfiniFactory, any of the games we've done for the show that have that programming element, there isn't a, like, that's the point. That's the only point, is that efficiency.
Right.
You know, like you said, I didn't get this, you know, I didn't play it for very long. But the, I mean, I read about it and talked about it a lot. So I've like put a lot of thinking into it, but you know, you're saying that you get to the point where you're not even anywhere near the end, you get overrun by the biters. Being that could be conceived as almost like a really, really long InfiniFactory puzzle where your efficiency is being judged.
Yeah.
But that's so, it's on a different scale. Like
it's so far abstracted.
Yeah. It's pure. Like exactly. This is very pure. In that respect,
have you ever played any of the Anno series?
I've never heard of those.
The last one, not the most recent one, but the one before that was called Dawn of Discovery in the U.S.
Anno 2070. I've seen that, but I haven't played it.
So this actually is in a way very similar to those games, because there's a lot of, it's all about creating resources from what you have available to you on the land, right? And there's a lot of this sort of perfect ratios to find, like having two of these corn farms will make one of these bread farms, right? Or they'll it'll create enough to supply one of these bread farms, or bread, you know, bakeries, whatever. So there's all of that same kind of numbers and ratios of this much production can lead to this much production of another product based on what the output is. This takes that to a whole other extreme, because in Anno, you don't have to create all the routes for all the goods to go. People just carry them from, you know, the farm to the bakery. Now you actually have to create a robot arm that pulls it out of there, supply electricity to that robot arm, feed it onto conveyor belts, get it over to wherever in your factory the next piece is.
And that ratio stuff, like, that's another piece of a big piece of this game that we didn't talk about is SimCity, obviously. Yeah. Where, like, SimCity, you know, that the 3-1-1, you know, mm-hmm. 3 residential per 1 commercial per 1 industrial. Yep. Which is like the golden ratio for SimCity. Like, that's something you discuss in that game as well. And in that game, you know, you're building out this little thing, and the high level play is just about how efficient you can make it. For me, like, the reason why, like, I was into SimCity, I was less into this, is that, like, there's also just a, like, you know, a like, hey, this is my little town, you yep. know. And I know eventually you get to the place where you can kind of build little forts in this, but I think that maybe that the fact that it is so industrial and so, you know, it's kind of reveling in that made it not mm-hmm. work as a SimCity for me. And right. that's only a small part of it too. Like, the biggest thing that you do in this is crafting on different scales.
Yep.
You know, so, like, you're crafting, it's always crafting. Like,
always crafting.
You're always crafting, even if it's, like, you know,
ABC. Always be crafting.
And if you say, like, oh, you know, you get something to start crafting for you, it's like, well, no, but then I'm crafting those things.
Yep.
And then if you get something to craft those things, well, you're getting something to craft the thing that crafts the thing that crafts the thing, you know?
It's 100% crafting, but the fact that you are also engaging in this sort of logical and spatial puzzle in order to create that
to make
puts
an
it
efficiency.
On a different element.
Yeah. 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 To make an efficient version of crafting.
Exactly.
Because it's not just, you know, going and mining stuff yourself. You know, mm-hmm. it's not Terraria or Minecraft.
Right.
It is a really, really interesting game as far as, like, mixing genres.
Yeah, I don't understand it. Like, that's why I said I couldn't. It's described on Wikipedia as a real-time strategy game, which is real-time, and there is strategy to it.
I don't know what I didn't play for very long, and, like, I won't, you know, people who listen to the show and listen to the other shows, like, know why this isn't for me. Like, this doesn't do stuff that I like in games, really, you know?
And this is clearly, like, a game that I was like, hey, I really want to
play
this
game. Like, platonic ideal of a Nick game, it feels like, you know, even though you like you're into puzzles too. So, like, mm-hmm. and there's not, like, you're making your own puzzle to this. So
right.
it's missing, you know, so I'm sure this isn't making, you know, your TIS 140.
100, yeah, 100, TIS 100.
Going away, you know, that still has value.
Exactly,
for you.
Yeah.
But, so I don't need to go into too much about, like, why it doesn't work, but it was interesting when I was talking to Brayden about it, because he would say, like, I'd be like, yeah, you know, I played it for a little while, and all my things were, I got to, like, a bunch of places where I had to wait, you know, like, it was like, dig 5 steel plates, and I made a machine that made steel plates, you know, and I was just doing the tutorials.
Right.
And I was like, I was just kind of standing around, or I'd go dig some wood for a little while because didn't have anything else to do. You know, just to, like, get this thing and, like, loop. He's like, well, then you get things to build those things, you know, like that loop, even if you recognize it as an artificial thing, mm-hmm. you know, it's still real. Like, being able to like, you know, climb that, you know, see a new horizon, like, constantly zoom out and see, you know, every box that you build is inside another box.
Right. Exactly.
You know, even if it is artificial, it doesn't mean it's not valuable. It's just how much do you want to see that box?
Right.
Because to my mind, I was like, oh, I can do that. But then I just have to build the next thing. You know, mm-hmm. and to him, it was like, no, it's cool. You get there and then you get trains and then, like, the trains do part of it for you. And I'm like, well, yeah, but then I have to build the trains and eventually I have to build the thing the trains are supplying parts for. And then he was saying, no, you should really play a multiplayer, because when I played it with Nick just kind of told me what to do. And then I would go over to his things and make them more efficient. I'm like, that sounds so much like work. Like, this just sounds like having a job, you know, and we were talking about it and, like, it is like having a job. Mm-hmm. But the difference is being, like, one, you have total control, which you never have at, like, a job.
Right.
Two, it's like a strict meritocracy, you know, and that's a big reason why I think people play games in general, is that, like, you know, a game has a system of rules that isn't true in real life. Like, when you do something well, you're rewarded in a game. Mm-hmm. That's not true in real life. You can do everything right and still get fucked over. You can do everything right and not be rewarded for it. It happens every day. It happens more times than not, actually, I think.
Absolutely.
You know, and so you're indulging in this, like, fantasy of what a perfect work life would be, where you can just come up with solutions, come up with trying to make things efficiency, like, make them efficient. You have unlimited, you just have the resources that you're willing to put into it. So mm-hmm. you're never going to be like, hey, you know what? If this department reported directly to this department, it would make things a lot easier. And then your boss says, well, actually, they're part of a union. that means that they can't do that, you know, or like, oh, there's not money to get the technology so they can do that efficiently.
Right.
Or those buildings are on other sides of campus. We need this middle, you know, there's no to it. You can just make like a perfect work environment. It's a lot like when I described when I was super young and wanted my mom to buy me Harvest Moon, and I was trying to describe Harvest Moon.
Yeah.
And she was just like, thought I was insane because I was, you know, like, oh, you get up every day, you get your crops, like you put in a bin, you get money for them, and then, you know, you buy better crops, you know? And she's like, why would you ever want to do that? Like, and I couldn't really explain it, you know, and it feels like that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick. I think that's probably, you know, we've said plenty about this game and what we should move on, but you brought up TS100 and how this is so close to being a perfect nickname. There's a new game coming out from Zachtronix that is like TIS100 plus another whole other level.
That guy
like,
never stops.
Yeah. Yeah. Never stop. He apparently worked for Valve for a while on Steam VR stuff. And then I heard about this game coming out, went and checked his LinkedIn, and he's no longer at Valve. He's back just full time making games himself. So
I wonder if there's a story there, if it's just, you know, just he ran out of stuff. It was contract labor, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that he was just like, all right, that was fun, and then just came back to doing his own thing. But anyway, let's move on. Because the other game we played is Abzu.
Yes. Abzu. The this is by Giant Squid, published by 505 Games. This is kind of the follow-up to Journey, their previous game.
Some of the same people.
There's some DNA. It's not exactly the same.
It's the same art director.
Yes, there we go.
Yeah.
To Journey, which is a game I also played for the first time pretty recently, because they released that on PS4. And I don't want to go into spoilers about that. The less you know about that game, the better.
I haven't played it yet.
Everyone should play Journey. Like, yeah, it's a 10 out of 10. It's really, really good. And this is shares some things with it, but I don't like this as much. And we'll get into it. Even though, like, I don't regret my time with it.
Right.
I found this a little bit frustrating, but so what, explain what Abzu is.
Sure. So Abzu, you play some, diver person, potentially
robot,
who knows, who's, coming into, who's exploring the sea, comes about following a shark. So there's pretty much very few mechanics. You have the ability to swim, and you can press one button to interact with stuff and kind of send out a little signal to stuff that's nearby you. And then you have another one that's just like a barrel roll. Mm-hmm. Other than that, it's all just an exploration. It's essentially, you know, a walking simulator, but underwater.
Yeah, like swimming sim.
A swimming sim.
Yeah.
But that said, it is fucking gorgeous. And that is the entire, that's what carries the entire game, is that it is super pretty exploration. The
music's really good.
Yeah. And just, it's like 2 hours, 2.5 hours maybe, of just like seeing some real pretty stuff for a long time.
Yes. It's good. It's very pretty. Like, it's one of the prettiest games I've played. It has like a bunch of moments. It has this kind of like, it's not quite cel shaded. I don't know exactly how to describe.
Yeah, it's like it's really smooth, low poly almost. Like, it's all very flat colors, but it doesn't look fake in every respect. Like, some of the creatures look like really real, but yet, you're right. It's very like a flat, simplistic colors on everything.
Yes. And it is you know, when you're talking about it being really mechanically light, like down to so there are no fail conditions. And there's like a meditate button in certain places where all you literally do is just watch fish eat other fish.
Yep.
For a little while, just for the sake of prettiness. There's a button that lets you ride fish.
Also for the sake of prettiness.
Yes, again, there's no advantage to ever being on a fish. There are no it kind of like there's some light puzzle elements that I think the game actually kind of suffers from. I don't think those add anything.
They definitely didn't add anything. Yeah. No.
but they're there because it just kind of, and some collection elements that also, there's like two collection things. One where you find these little generators that seem to be repopulating the ocean with fish.
Yeah.
It's really unusual because they come out as kind of holograms. So you never know up until, you know, I'm a little bit confused about this game, like kind of interpreting it, because at that point it feels like this is a computer simulation or something. You know, I'm creating holographic fish.
Right.
They come out of this thing and then they turn real. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm on the holodeck. You know that. And then there's this other, like, these seashells you can collect, and they're just there to be a video game collectible.
Yeah, they're just collectibles.
Yeah, it's pretty, like, that's, you know, kind of shouldn't have been, I think.
I'm pretty sure it's just an achievement. Like, it's just, if you found all the shells, then you get an achievement.
It's not even a different ending or anything.
As far as I know, yeah.
And they don't incentivize interesting exploration. They're not like in, you know, some of them are kind of tucked away. A bunch of them are just in the middle of the floor. I don't know what that's doing there, and I feel like it kind of gets in the way of this, like, you know, this art piece.
Right. And most of the levels, despite feeling really open, are obviously meant to be hallways. Like,
yes. Yeah.
So it's not really an exploration, a game emphasizing exploration in any respect. It's just, it's a super linear game with a little bit of open rooms that if you go look in the tucked corners, you might find some collectible and stuff.
Maybe. Most of the time not. Yeah. One of the things Jeremy Parrish from Retronauts wrote a review, and one of the things he said is that it's a game that gets, instead of like a big open game, like this should feel bigger as you play it, and this game feels much smaller as you go.
Yeah, that is a weird choice.
That's pretty fair, right? Like at some point you start just kind of seeing the systems and like, oh, I just need to move forward. This is the critical path forward. I have to do this puzzle. You know, and the game gets less about being pretty as it gets more video gamey.
Yeah.
To the game's detriment. Like I would have enjoyed this as Underwater Proteus. Like, I think Proteus is the game that I brought up the most that we haven't done on the show. That is a good example for things.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's at its best, it's just Underwater Proteus. It's like watching a Miyazaki cartoon, but one of the weird, later boring ones that don't have conflict. You know, they're just pretty to watch.
Yeah, that I totally agree.
You know, and not Dark Souls Miyazaki, Studio Ghibli Miyazaki.
Right. I understood. Yeah. I don't know if everyone else did, hopefully. But I did.
Hopefully. This is not the Dark Souls of water exploration games. Like, there's very little Dark Souls DNA in this.
You're definitely right about it getting more and more sort of the systems revealed and more constrained as you go on. I mean, up until the ending, which is still really constrained, but it's like kind of a real playful ending.
Is the kind of the idea. And it's, which, like, it doesn't entirely not work. It's just like, so the thing that I think this game does the best, that exploration of the ocean thing, has been done. You know, like, there are games where, like, you know, there's endless ocean. Like, there's literally games that, like, are about just exploring the ocean and petting fish.
Right.
You know, and that, like, I just have this weird feeling this doesn't bring that much new to the table. Like, it's very pretty.
Yeah.
But there's not too much to it that I feel like I can't get elsewhere.
It's pretty is pretty much all I got out of it. And now I feel like that was basically all I was really trying to get out of it, too. Like, knowing the one thing that it shared an art director with a game famous for being pretty.
Journey, like, if you ever get a chance to play it, which, like, it's only on PS3 and PS4, you know, so it'll be hard to make that happen. But, like, if you maybe I'll see if you want to, like, you can play it on Duck Stream or something.
Yeah,
and just make sure nobody spoils it for you, and that'll be a fun 2-hour block of Duck Stream, because it's like,
let's do it.
It's but it has, so that, you know how the end of this game, when it becomes about something, kind of, when Journey becomes about something, it's great. And when this becomes about something, it's like, well, this, you know, I'm not looking at pretty fish, and what this about, I'm not that interested in. Yeah. But we'll get into that with spoiler stuff. I think this is worth playing because it's beautiful and sounds really great. I don't think it's particularly, like, good as a game. Like, it's like a,
it's not interesting. It doesn't bring anything fresh to the table in terms of, you know, expanding the art form or anything, but it is very pretty and it's an entertaining short.
It's very beautiful. Like, I think I like, you know, my standard for these games is, like, this kind of game is going to be something like Proteus, where it's like, just the point is just the beauty, and it doesn't have any, you know, any gameplay or narrative kind of pretensions to be about anything else,
which is fine, especially for people who aren't super familiar with games, or, you know, this is a very easy game I could see handing to anyone.
Oh, totally. Like, it controls pretty well for underwater stuff never controls well.
Exactly.
Like, on a curve,
it's still not, got an underwater camera.
Yeah, it's better than, you know, than your Super Mario 64. Like,
yeah,
which is a nightmare. And guess what? Mario Galaxy is no better. Like, just played that for the show, and it's also a nightmare. Underwater controls are bad.
Always.
But yeah, let's get to the spoiler stuff.
Yeah. So, real quick, some admin stuff. You know, if you want to help support the show, support all the shows on the Duckfeed Network, you can go to our Patreon at patreon.com/duckfeedtv. There's various rewards for you for however much you might be able to pitch us, and you know, that's the most direct monetary way to support us. Mm-hmm. If you don't have extra change lying around, you could always come hang out with us on facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade or at Comrade Podcast on Twitter, and iTunes rating reviews, tell your friends, spread the word in any way you can. That also is a huge help.
And also, meet Nick. Come to the Portland Retro Gaming Expo.
Come meet me.
Check it out. You know, the Check It Out Comrade is not doing anything specifically for that, but October 21st to 23rd, Cole is flying out, so we are doing a live Watch Out for Fireballs. But Nick and Brayton will both be at the booth. We will be hanging out. We're going to do meetups and stuff like that. There'll be information on our website. We want to meet you. Come up and say hi, grab a button, you know, just hang out.
And it's always a lot of fun. Like, the four of us getting together is always a really good time. So we want to share that experience with you guys.
Absolutely. It's going to be real good. So,
I just found out actually when I was on Abject Suffering that we have some Comrade t-shirts available.
Yes, we do. If you go to duckfeed.tv/shirts, and I'm checking that out and making sure that is the correct address. It is. That goes directly to our TeePublic merch store. We have logos for all the shows. I mean, you can get them on shirts, tote bags, coffee cups, anything like that. Do so.
Like a non-shitty version of Cafe Press.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like, they're actually, I have not got one, but everyone says they're very good quality. And if you get a Check It Out Comrade shirt or coffee cup, hit us up and let us know.
Yep. I've told the first person, I told this in Slack, I'll reveal it to everyone. If you reach out to me and you have some sort of Comrade swag available to you, let me know and I'll try and find something for you.
And the logo for this show is not like a big obnoxious Mountain Dew. Like, it doesn't say the words Check It Out Comrade on it.
No.
This is a shirt you could wear and not be embarrassed to wear, I think.
Unless you're really anti-communist and you don't want to be...
listening. You capitalist pig fuck. Get out of here.
Unless you're really afraid of being called out as a Soviet, then I think you're probably fine wearing our sword and sickle logo.
The whenever I talk about, you know, crushing capitalism on Slack, because like I'm turning into a hippie in my old age, but like that's the Check It Out Comrade is like the communism like emote, so people will put the little Check It Out Comrade thing under it, which I really like.
Me too. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, so definitely do that. And they're reasonably priced too. The shirts are $14.
Well,
so
they were just on sale, I think, for 14, but they're usually pretty cheap anyway.
They're still on sale right now. I just went to the site, so I'm kind of surprised. But if you do this as we are, they will increase in price in 6 minutes. The time we're recording this. Well, shit, guys. TeePublic does sales all the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, 6 minutes.
That wasn't our doing. It's just TeePublic having stuff on sale. Yeah, I picked one up for myself, and I'll wear it when we're out at Portland Retro Game Expo.
Absolutely.
I haven't got it yet, so I don't know what quality it is, but I'm excited to get it.
They're apparently very good.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
All right. We're going to do a quick little ditty right here. We're going to talk just a little bit about some spoilery Abzu stuff. And if you haven't played or don't want to hear spoilers, stop now. If not, we'll catch you on the other side.
Absolutely.
You were waiting on that one. I heard you try to get that out.
Not that long. surprisingly, like, just felt like I want to make sure I got it before the end of the thing, so I didn't have to try to say it at the end. There's a robot diver.
Yeah, robot diver.
You're exploring the ruins of a culture that worshipped a shark.
Yep.
That worshipped sharks.
While following a shark.
Yes, there's a shark that hangs around. It kind of seems like a villain. It's not actually the villain. Aliens came down and started stealing ocean energy from these people. Like, you go through, there's these kind of hieroglyphs on the wall.
Okay.
You came down with those people, so it's like you're repentant, you know, like you're fighting these alien like mines and this, you know, because the game, like every single fucking indie game, like that starts off in a beautiful world, like you start seeing where it's corrupted by man.
Yeah.
I'm so sick of that. Like, it is just, you know, again, like, I mean, it's an unintentional pairing with Infinifactory, I guess, or not Infinifactory, Factorio, where like it's just, I get it, environmentalism, good. But the so you know, you are from that. Eventually you sacrifice yourself to bring the shark back to life, who comes back as Ghost Shark, and then you fuck up all the aliens, right?
Is that what that is?
I think that's what it is. I think you summon Spirit Shark.
I accept it, but I mean, all I got out of it was, I'm a robot, shark got hurt, I helped shark, we go blow up mines together. Like, it was, there's hieroglyphs on the walls, but the amount of story that you're actually able to pull from the game without really trying to piece stuff together, which may not fit all that well together anyway, is just that.
The hieroglyphs like kind of tell that, the stuff I said that wasn't
right.
And that's in the hieroglyphs. Like,
I picked up some of that. Like, that's definitely the same sort of emphasis I got, but I never put it together into a long form kind of, this is the story of the game.
As far as I can tell, that's the story of the game. I don't know why you can summon like a ghost shark. I don't know why when you're summoning life back to the ocean, it's electronic.
Yeah.
Like, that's frustrating to me. Not because it needs to have like a literal meeting, but just because it doesn't, you know, it's like, when I thought this was a simulation, I was like, okay, this is going to turn out that I'm like I was sure it was going to be like the ruins of the future and everything were going to be bad. But like at the end of this, the ending of this game is going to be me coming back to real life, like taking off my VR helmet or whatever and being like in a shitty office and like a polluted, you know, and it's just gonna be like, oh, like appreciate nature while you have it.
Right.
It's not that though.
That's a better story.
I think so. Like as it is, like the spiritualism, like when you literally summon like the ghost shark,
mm-hmm.
like that is takes this kind of a little bit too far for me. And that's silly because it's a really fantastic game, but like it's this weird spiritual element when everything else has been kind of portrayed as technological up until this point.
Yeah, I mean, there's an orb inside of you that you put into other things to restore the life of the ocean.
Ocean energy. That's what you know, so when they show the hieroglyphs, like people drew that out of the ocean. That's right. Like life energy or something. They show there's an hieroglyph of you. Like you show up at the same time the pyramids show up.
Uh-huh.
It's like things, and you're holding the ocean energy as well.
Okay.
There. So like, you know, but we know the pyramids took the ocean energy. That's in another hieroglyph. So my thinking being that like you decide you like changed your mind, you know, or right. something like that. Like you were a part of this invading force and fell in love with the majesty of the ocean and decided not to do it. But like the end of this is just like, it is just you, you know, you and a ghost shark.
Yeah.
Like smashing minds. And like when you get done with it, like, so the really beautiful parts, and this should be in the spoiler section anyway, even if they're not plot related, involve this, like the moment when you and the shark like jump out of the water.
Yeah.
And the camera changes to above the water. Like that's like a really, really great moment.
Yeah.
There's some like really good, or the thing with the whales, like anytime you're swimming with the whales.
Mm-hmm. The one where it's the side camera with you like super small against the massive.
Yeah.
Sperm
whale. Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. Like that is absolutely. Just, you know, beautiful and really, really great. Makes you feel small about mm-hmm. the ocean. It just muddied up with this like mythology stuff.
Yeah, I don't understand it. And you're completely free to ignore it.
Oh, that's true.
It doesn't really add anything.
You are
but
free
it does...
to ignore it, but then you spend the second half of the game like in brown corridors fighting mines.
Which is pretty much what I got out of it.
Yeah.
Like that is what I was with the shark smashing up mines. It was just my revenge for when the mines blasted me around that massive entryway.
That's such an annoying mechanic. Like,
it's so dumb.
I didn't want you to have to, you know, you to die from it because that would be more annoying.
That'd be
but
worse.
As is, it just like, oh, you're just going to like, I just got really frustrated and caught by those things.
Yeah, me too.
And then when the shark first eats your little buddy, your little option mm-hmm. that you have with you, like I was like, oh, at some point this is going to start out really slow. And then at some point, like I'm going to get chased by a shark. Like this is going to be about, hey, you think the ocean's really pretty, but nature is nature. And at some point these things are not going to tolerate you. You know, so the idea is going to be, you know, the scorpion carrying the frog across the water or whatever.
Right.
You know, I'm a scorpion. This is what I do. Like that's going to be the message. But no, like that's not the message either. It's just like environmentalism is good. Like the ocean is beautiful. The end.
Yeah.
You know, with some kind of spirity ghost stuff in it. And like, yeah, I'm really looking forward to you playing Journey. Like,
yeah, I really want
we'll
to
do. So this is what we're going to do for a Duckstream. You heard it here. Cause we haven't done our 24 hours of programming is we're going to no spoilers. Anybody who's listening to this and I'll put it out there when we announce the thing to have nobody spoil it for you.
And to be fair, I think, you know, I know that there's some co-op element. That's the one spoiler I know about it. Otherwise, I know it's people running around desert, and I think that the co-op thing is supposed to be, or not really co-op, but other things are online people. I'm pretty sure that's a big spoiler I didn't want to know. But
so I had an idea, but I still, you had to kind of put your mindset in not knowing that, and the way it articulates is sure. also worth, is still interesting.
Yeah, so, I figured as much. I figured the game, and the game still looks pretty even.
It's very pretty to watch.
Yeah.
So what we'll do is we'll do a block, like a 2-hour block of Duckstream. We'll have you play Journey over my house and stream it. And then we'll do a live, like, post. We'll do a live check it out comrade afterwards. And we'll talk about Journey after you
let's
play
it. Let's do it. That sounds great.
And maybe one other. Let's pick another co-op indie game we can do, too.
Yeah.
And we'll do a full live episode.
That'll be our co-op or a couch co-op special that we didn't do. Well
this,
that
yeah,
one won't
Journey's
really
count. Not couch co-op. But, like,
but we can find a couple other games and make that happen.
Yeah. So we'll that'll be part of Duckstream.
Absolutely.
We'll do a check it out comrade block. Yeah. So it is... Even if you know the twist, it is worthwhile. I was surprisingly affected by it. I didn't have like people, you know, play that game and cry. I didn't have that happen, but might have if I didn't know the thing until the end. Like it is very like, I think it's very affecting.
Cool. I look forward to it.
So, and it's an interesting companion piece to this, which is also something that is another thing too, like that I'm looking forward to you playing a Journey too, is that like movement is really joyful in Journey. Mm-hmm. Like it's never frustrating. Like this is, like you said, it's still underwater
consistently
controls.
Frustrating.
Yeah, like it's never put a game underwater. Like, it's never been fun. There's never been a fun Mario level underwater.
Never put a game underwater.
Like, never. The Tomb Raider sections and Tomb Raider were just, like, frustrating and terrifying because you're underwater. Like, it was extra terrifying because the
water temple.
Your water temple's awful. Like, underwater sections of games are the worst.
Yep.
Anywho. So, yeah, look forward to that during DuckStream.
That sounds great. Yeah, that's a really good idea. I'm glad you came up with it.
Cool. Thanks, everybody.
All right. See you guys later.